What is up, conscious monkeys? Welcome back to another episode of, you guessed it, you already know the title of it, Traveling to Consciousness with your host, that's me, Clayton Kuteri. And in today's podcast episode, we have the amazing, the beautiful, the intelligent Amy Blair. Amy is an Akashic Oracle. She's a channeler. She's a code keeper of the holographic matrix. She brings down this multi-dimensional light codes and translates them into English for the restoration of the original divine blueprint of humanity. If that sounds like a mouthful, that's because it is. And it can be a little complex, but in this podcast episode, we will be breaking that down. We also talk about Amy's journey as a midwife. We talk about delivering babies and what we can learn from it from a cosmic and a traumatic level. And experience. Amy is also the host of the Third Eye Awakening podcast, which she has so generously had me on. So go look for that podcast episode if you're considering listening to her. You want to check out her stuff. It's always amazing supporting other spiritual content creators. So go check out my podcast with her because I know it's an amazing one where we talked about God and Jesus and evil. And we talk about a lot of that stuff in this podcast too. And now that I'm thinking about it, it might have just kind of been a continuum from our conversation on her podcast. So go check that out. She's also a mother, so she sees the perspective from a motherly figure who has kids. So if, I don't know, I think we can all still relate to it, whether or not you're a mother or not. I think there's a wisdom in it for everybody. Even if you're at some point going to be a parent, I think you can find wisdom for her. And she serves her community through her courses, her programs, and her mentorship in helping people manifest. She really is a beautiful and calm soul. You can feel it from her, just from her voice, honestly, or if you're watching, which I know, and I need to make a comment about this, is that I know that the YouTube videos will not be up exactly on time. There's a little bit of a delay. I took a back seat on YouTube and let the ball drop, so I do need to catch up on that. Life has been a little bit hectic as I've been in the progress of moving my studio and my living location. So once that move is officially complete, hopefully within the next week or two, things should be running a lot smoother and you'll see a lot more powerful content coming through these microphones and in your ear hole. So all of that out of the way, go check out my book if you haven't yet. The link's going to be in the bio. Go click on the master link, but it's Revealing the Secret Teachings of Jesus, the Gospel of Thomas, volume 1, verses 1 to 10. It's so powerful, guys. I break down Jesus's words from the perspective of wisdom, from the perspective of finding God through wisdom. And I couldn't have been led here without the spiritual line of gurus that I have been following. If you've listened to this podcast at all, you know the list of them. And yeah, I guess I'm very grateful for them finding their way into my life. I got a little mini shrine that I have on my desk, and so I'm looking at them as I'm speaking this, and I don't know, it's a little bit psychedelic for me to kind of do that. Yeah, very grateful. I'm becoming a bad podcast host at this point. So without further delay, I want to introduce you guys to Amy Blair.
Traveling to consciousness, exploring spiritual journeys to find answers in uncertainty.
Right? And then I'll just be like, okay, this is the spot to start to start people off on. So so I guess with that, like the manifesting generator, what you were saying about how, what did you say? Wow, that was literally 3 seconds ago. What's going on in the vortex right now? Something feels off. I don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot going on.
Is that something you've tapped into recently? Like what's happening?
Yeah, I just feel like what's happening is we're going through a humongous, you use the word vortex, and that's perfect. It feels like a huge, almost like whirlpool, like a funnel, almost like the dream is breaking down and a whole bunch of shit is getting sucked down the drain and it's getting pulled apart as it does. I think that's a lot of what we're seeing in the world in terms of like the really intense summer of fires that pretty sure are not naturally organic occurring fires.
Well, when you say that real quick, when you say that, do you mean like nefarious human actors, or is it like an energetic spiritual fire?
Yeah, so on, it's both, because on the, in the third and fourth dimensional level, it's playing out through a narrative of a polarity between forces of evil and forces of benevolence, I guess, forces of selfish self-servingness and forces of service to the whole of creation. And so on the level, on the boots on the ground level for us as humans, all of that is true, where there are nefarious acts happening and direct energy weapons being used and like fires being set that aren't just natural organic occurrences. But then at the higher dimensional level, I perceive that it is more like the dream that we are all in. Like I describe it as we're characters in the dream of a great dreaming mind. And the dream is dissolving to turn into a different dream, the same way that our dreams do. Like that we can have a whole story arc playing in our dream, and then all of a sudden it dissolves and turns into something else. And most of the time when we wake up, we're not really aware of that transitional period. But I think that's what's happening here. And that's what is, you know, I don't know if you've heard anybody talking about the ascension from 3D to 5D. I'm sure you have, because that's a lot of people talk about it. But I think that is what the ascension is, and like a almost like a new, like new earth things that people talk about, is it's a new version of the dream. That's how I perceive it. So both of those things
are
true.
A new version of the dream. I know I've heard a lot about this in regards to the word that I always hesitate to speak, because I'm not, I feel like my platform's not big enough to completely get demonetized yet. So the C word, if you know what I'm talking about, where that happened 2 years ago. I've always kind of heard that this was like, and I want to be respectful about this because I know this can be very triggering for people. It was kind of this purging, if you will, of negative energy that, you know, came in the form of negative energy, but it helped almost make space energetically for new things. Is this kind of what we're seeing, like round two, but in terms of force, like in your opinion, of course, is this what we're seeing in terms of, you know, Maui's on fire, Canada's on fire? Is that what is happening right now?
Yeah, I think a purging is an amazing analogy. I really do, because, like if you think of a literal forest fire, like a natural organic occurring one, it is a purge. It's the clearing away of a lot of old growth that otherwise doesn't, it takes a long time for it to fall on its own, which creates space for new growth. So it's a regeneration of the forest, which doesn't actually die. It just gets like raised down at the, you know, the surface level, but all of the life continues, like all the root systems are still there, right? So then new growth occurs. And I feel like that is what's happening, again, like likewise with a ton of sensitivity for the effect that it has had on a lot of people. But it, so I got this message last year while I was on an acupuncture table and I had the needles in me. I got this like, I call it a download. So it just was a direct knowing and a direct answer to a question that I had. And my question was, why does reality not feel real right now? Because it really didn't to me at the time. And the answer I got is that we're already on the ships. And I really had to break that down, because I personally don't even know what ships are, and I don't even fully believe in ships. Now I kind of understand them better, but at the time I was like, what the hell does that mean? But the imagery and understanding I got to accompany it is that we think we're on Earth, but we're actually on these ships, which are just, a ship is a symbolic, it's a symbol of a vehicle that moves us from one location to another, right? So we're on the ships and we are in these medically induced coma-like states, and we are being tended to by beings that love us very much and are totally benevolent. And we're in these dreams, And the dream is like the play out of a story that was already in process. And they are adjusting the variables of our stories so that we work through the shit we need to work through so that we can finalize that story so that a new story can freshly start. And what I understood was that we're not even really in the 3D anymore, the way that we think of the 3D. There was a time that we were in the 3D, but really we're just in the astral right now. We're just in the fourth dimension. We still perceive that everything is manifested physically, but the ship is sort of like the transit process through the fourth dimension to the fifth dimension. As I say this, I'm like, I don't know if that makes sense, but
let's break it down a little bit here. Cause okay. I look at my hand and you're saying I'm not in the 3D, but I look at my hand and I say, okay, well, there's length, there's width, there's height to my hand. So whenever you're saying I'm not in the 3D anymore, what does that mean?
I guess I mean that, well, do you remember, like, when you think back to the 80s or the 90s, can you remember it?
Well, I wasn't born until 94, so.
Okay.
I remember parts of the 90s, yes.
Okay, so then I don't even know, maybe it would still count in the 2000s. But, like, let's go to the late 90s, like 98, 99. Do you remember the way that reality felt? Meaning, like, to me, it felt a little bit grittier, heavier, slower moving. It had a different texture to it. So it's very hard to describe. And if you were a little kid, you might not have been thinking about that stuff. I feel like
you know, as you're saying this, I'm kind of tapping back into either music videos that I were watching or TV shows. And I guess I can feel it a little bit, but I don't know that I would be able to consciously be like, oh yeah, I know what you're saying, but maybe people listening would.
Yeah. I mean, you can try it in the 2000s too. I don't really remember as much in the 2000s. Something changed. So I'm not really sure. Like, maybe it was Y2K. We all think it was 2012, but maybe it was Y2K. I don't know. But if you watch shows from the 90s, definitely their life felt very different. And of course it did, because there was less technology, blah, blah, blah. But there was a different things were more static, I guess. In this time that we're in, everything moves very fast. Like time, I don't know if you've noticed this, but time is just flying by. It's almost dizzying. Last year I had a really, it was very challenging for me to orient myself to the way that time was feeling different. It's like moving so fast, we're moving through themes so fast, our emotions are changing so fast, our ideas are changing so fast, like everything moves so quickly. Whereas I take the 90s because I was a teenager in the 90s, so I remember it quite well. But in the 90s, it felt slower. Themes played out over a longer period of time. There was just more density is the best way I can describe it. So it felt more like, you know, that quantum experiment that demonstrated the dual nature of particles, that like something can either be a photon, can be a particle or a wave.
The double slit experiment.
So it's kind of like that, almost like back at a certain point in time, everything was a particle, like reality was a particle and now it's a wave.
When you were talking there, it was kind of, yeah, it was kind of reminding me of recently where I, how do I articulate this? Like, I'll work on like these little, I'll have like these little side missions, if you will. Like, one of the current ones I'm dealing with is patience, which is actually taking a lot longer than I was hoping, but, but it's these little like side missions of, okay, now you need to start stepping into your power and exerting when you know something's right, but do it in a gentle and kind way. And there's these little, those little things keep coming up into my reality a lot quicker of like, okay, you need to exert yourself a bit more. Okay, you need to do a little bit more of this. Okay, you need to be a bit more patient, you know? And so I've seen these, or you need to be a little bit more trusting. And so I have seen those appearing in my reality a lot faster. Is that kind of on board with what you're saying here?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we process information and we change through it. We move through it so much faster. And the quality of time feels much faster as we do so. I have to bring everything back to a dream. So it's kind of like before when I refer to us having been in the 3D in the past, it's like that deep place in the dream where you have no idea that it's a dream. Like you fully are 100% like, this is happening. This is me. And then as the consciousness rises up through the different brainwave frequencies, closer to like waking consciousness, the dream becomes more malleable, more lucid. Do you know what I mean? Like we can shift it more. I just think that's what's happening with us like, on a consciousness
level. It's like when you're hyper aware of it. Like I know for a long time I had a dream journal. I've slowly moved away from it, and that's a whole rabbit hole of a conversation. But the premise of it was is that for how long would it have been? Maybe like the first 6-ish months of keeping it, like I barely dreamed at all. And then something pivoted and I was like dreaming every single night. And then there was like another pivot where then I was lucid dreaming pretty frequently. And it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, you're becoming aware of these subtler energies or like being fully aware of the reality that you're experiencing.
Yeah. Exactly. That's totally it. And thank you for sharing that because that's very cool just to hear that it was about 6 months where you probably felt a lot of the time like, why am I even keeping this dream journal?
I took time off too. Dreams. I was like, fuck this isn't working.
yeah, totally. And then, but nonetheless, because you had created an intention like that your dreams were worth exploring, eventually that changed things and you started dreaming every night and then it changed again and you started lucid dreaming. But yeah, I think that we are just learning how to lucid dream. We're learning at this time to remember that this is also a dream state. Like we think that we're awake, but it's just a different state of consciousness to when we're asleep. We're still in the dream and we are learning how to lucid dream. And I believe that the fifth dimension is when we like nail it. Like we know how this works. And so we can create the dream, sculpt it in real time, individually and together, and very intentionally create something so much more beautiful than what we're experiencing right now. Because right now it's a bunch of our unconscious shadow, our repressed shadow, and like the accumulation of lifetimes of grief and suffering and anger and vengeance and rage, like all that stuff has to play out somehow. And so it's playing out through our current narratives. But, and that's why that the using the analogy of a purge for the C word, I think is very apt because it's purging all of that repressed shit that's still there. I mean, that's what I see in the Akashic Records is like, just because somebody dies doesn't mean the emotional state that they experience predominantly during their lifetime goes away. It remains. And that's what the Akashic Records are, is like the record, the remnant, the imprint of everything that has been experienced. And we have, we've been functioning as humans through sort of a paradigm of like, keep calm, carry on, and just like interrupt our emotional process, get over it, keep moving forward. But it really is like, we have a huge, like just because you don't poo, if you don't have the chance to poo when you naturally have to poo, the poo doesn't go away. It's still in your body. Like you have to wait until the opportunity comes up again, right? And it's like that with all of our emotional states or our felt states of being or the identity that we perceive ourselves to be. And it just sort of collects and we have to purge it. We have to release it. Otherwise, we just keep recreating different versions of the same themes.
I kind of want to bring this back again to like the 3D, the 4D, and the 5D, because I think this is this feels like a very important thing we should nail down if we're like for the remainder of this conversation. So like it feels like then, and maybe I'm just repeating your words back to you, but just so I'm on the same page. When we're saying 3D, it's not, you're not essentially saying that it's my hand that I'm looking at. Like you can be let's say you can be in the fifth dimension consciously. Like it's more of a conscious act as opposed to like a physical of where am I type thing.
Yeah.
So it's like I can be in the fifth dimension and see my hand and know that that's a third dimensional object, but consciously I'm making decisions from a higher perspective. Is that kind of a maybe dimension is the wrong word, because it makes me think of length, width, and height, but we're talking about something slightly different.
Yeah, I guess I refer to them as dimensions of consciousness, but the way that I understand the dimensions is that they are bandwidths of consciousness. So in the third dimension, consciousness, it's a lot like the visible light spectrum and the whole entire electromagnetic spectrum. But so, you know, in the red light spectrum, the wavelengths take on a certain quality. They're longer, more stretched out. And that's how they have to behave in that, you know, it's not a rule, but you could call it a law, because it never deviates from that. And so the third dimension, the way I see it is like the energy of consciousness, or we could just call it energy, slows down and takes on these geometric shapes that are fairly stable. And that creates, and then we decode those shapes. We render it into all of the texture and the color, like we as the observer are really an absolutely necessary component to experiencing the 3D the way that we do. At its fundamental core, like when you look at molecular structures, right, they're just shapes. It's just shapes, atoms coming together in geometric formations that are fairly stable. Mm. But they're still very dynamic. They change over time. And then we interpret them and create this whole amazing world out of it. In the fifth dimension of consciousness, yeah, you would look down at your hand and you would have a hand, but you, because your consciousness is now expanded and anchored into the fifth dimension, you wouldn't experience your hand as physical anymore. You would experience it as like almost plasma light. So you would... everything would be more malleable, much faster to change, because it doesn't have that same sense of solidity and fact. And it's so much a product of our beliefs. Am I making sense?
Yeah. I guess it's really the perception that we're talking about when we're talking about third dimension, fourth dimension, fifth dimension. It's not so much about this physical dimension, because if we're talking about this physical dimension, that's purely third, and I guess it kind of leaks into the fourth if we're talking about time.
Yeah.
But our perception of it, and this is probably where a lot of triggering happens, which is our identification with this third dimension. And I guess this is where that overlap comes in, because if you have third dimension consciousness, that means you're attached to the third dimension, the physical plane of reality. Mm-hmm. If you start getting to the fourth dimension, it's like, okay, I can almost separate myself from this individual moment and look at that fourth dimension of time and say, oh, okay, like I can see that over time, like good things happen, bad things happen, good things happen, bad. But it's going to take you on this like journey. And so you don't really know what that journey is, but you know that it exists. And then fifth dimension would be that the perspective above that, where you're then able to actually move that trajectory however you would like.
Yeah, totally. And the third dimension still exists as a real bandwidth, right? So I perceive that when we're in the fifth dimension, first of all, like the big hurdle is the fourth dimension. It's funny that we say we're shifting from 3D to 5D and nobody talks about the 4D, when actually that's the big challenge, is the 4D, because that's where all of our stories exist and we're super wrapped up.
What
in
makes
our
it
stories.
So challenging before we go through that?
It's the stories. It's because, like, so for example, let's say you have a, or like not you, but one has a story that every time they try something new, they fail, that they're just incapable. They can't, like, they never succeed, or they have bad luck with everything. It just never works out for them. That's a powerful story. There is a lot of energy that's holding that story in place and continues to manifest, you know, supportive scenarios that reinforce that story. And so it's very challenging for us to start to deconstruct that story and no longer buy into it and free ourselves from it so that we can then manifest something different. And that all exists in the fourth dimension. Like the third dimension on its own, it's just facts. It just is. Like animals have, they mostly exist in third dimensional consciousness. They're just very much in the present moment. They're in their bodies. They're dealing with their third dimensional needs and their third dimensional experience. That part isn't so much the challenge. The fourth dimension is the challenge, where we have the self-awareness, but we're not masters of that self-awareness yet.
Mm. And this comes back then to that, I don't think we discussed it yet, but I heard a lot where it's like, oh, school, Earth is like this school for us to explore and learn things. And it seems like, based on your answer, that this is that challenge of learning, is learning how we're able to deprogram out our instinctual behavior, right? Because if we have that program or that story that you were talking about, where you have these money beliefs about being poor or bad things always happen to you, this is the place that's going to teach you how to rewrite that story. And I guess like the fourth dimension is the story, right? Like, because how we were talking about how mm-hmm. it's like this, it's the time. And any story that you have, any good story, is going to take time to unfold. You don't just jump into the movie theater, watch one frame, and then jump out. You're like, oh, okay, like that was a great movie. Like you watched one frame, and a movie is thousands or maybe millions of frames that are all put together over a 3-hour period. And so, you know, and I'm trying to just repeat your words back to you, you know, using that as like third dimension is being aware of those individual frames. But then fourth dimension is seeing the perspective of how those individual movie frames create the entire movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Totally. And I think a lot of us, we're just in the place where we're forgetting that it's a movie because it feels so real. And we're so like, then we buy into it and we inadvertently, unknowingly perpetuate, especially the challenging portions of the movie because it feels so real.
Yeah. Have you found like a way, or have the records ever talked to you about, let me think about this. Because based on what you're saying, we find ourselves in these heavy situations, very dense, very, you know, terrible things that occur in the world or have occurred in the world and maybe will occur in the future. How do we almost separate ourselves from that or release that heaviness, right? Because how do we release that heaviness? I don't want to kind of trail on here, but how do we release that heaviness, if you will?
The heaviness of the fear of bad things happening in the future?
The heaviness of bad things happening now, right? Because as we're sitting here having this conversation, there's horrific things that are happening all across the world. But, you know, how do we take a step back and work with that? Like, how are we supposed to move forward given that predicament?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I feel like this is so poignant right now. I just recorded a podcast intro for my own podcast where I was like literally talking about this because, well, there are a few different angles. So first of all, I perceive that there is a glamour that's cast upon all those things. Do you know what I mean when I say glamour?
No, please break that down.
Okay, so it's a magic term that refers to basically like you cast a projection screen of allure and magnetism over top of anything. And it doesn't necessarily make it attractive. Like if we look at the fires and the situation happening in Hawaii, it's not attractive. None of us are looking at that and feeling like, oh gosh, isn't the world just beautiful? We know it's horrible, but it has a glamour cast on it that's designed to basically harness our attention, because our attention is by far the most powerful currency. Money is so valueless compared to our attention. Our attention is what manifests. It's the deciding factor of what collapses the waveform into, you know, a decided timeline, right? So I perceive that like over celebrity culture, sports culture, you know, music and entertainment culture, mainstream news, politics, truth or news, all of it, there social media for sure, there is a glamour that is designed to take you out of this present, actually manifested moment in your life and like cause you to feel all manner of things. But for me, and I think like the people that resonate with me, it's mostly like an empathic level of distress where you're so aware of the suffering people must be experiencing and you feel so helpless to do anything about it. And we're just sending out these like distress waves. And those are a version of Loosh energy. Have you heard of Loosh?
I have not.
Okay. I can't remember who coined that term, but it's a term to describe like our powerful emotional emanations. And they're usually negative emotions. And there are like, if you know anything about how magic spells and rituals work, it is an extremely energy rich commodity. And it is used to charge up basically like symbols, sigils, spells. Like there is a lot of sorcery. A lot of the dark actors are involved in sorcery and just different versions of magic to try and manipulate the variables of this reality towards the outcomes that would serve them. And they really do not care about the collateral damage to anyone else. And so there's this glamour that's cast over it to take you out of this moment in your life right now, which is the only moment that you have. This is where your power is. This is where all of our power is in this moment. And it also robs us of the joy of what we're living right now as we look at these things that cause us intense distress that we can't do anything about. And so the guidance that I receive is to just be extremely selective of what I allow myself to see and spend time on. And I'm aware that that can sound super privileged and like cold-hearted and like I don't care about the suffering, but it's, I just understand that my ability to hold a frequency of a utopian timeline rather than a dystopian timeline is the most powerful contribution I can make from where I am. If somebody feels within themselves a calling, let's say, to go to Hawaii and assist in the, and like bring themselves to the doorstep of that, you know, that reality that people are experiencing, then they should absolutely listen to that. But for all of us who know, like, I know I'm not called to do that. I know that I need to stay here and take care of my family. And so it's not on my doorstep. And so I can't lose a bunch of my energy to it, but I can also hold it with deep compassion. And instead of sending out like distress signals, I can send out like deep love signals.
Okay. I get, I get what you're saying. It's bringing me to what's going on now in politics and something I never really talk about. So hopefully I can try to keep a higher level perspective without jumping into the weeds of it. But what I've been seeing recently is in regards to President Trump with all these indictments that are occurring. And there are so many little things that just hint at nefarious BS, if you will, that's occurring with it. I'm not sure how familiar with it you are. I know you're in Canada, but you know, like there's all this just like tomfoolery, if you will, with, you know, the people that are prosecuting him. They're leaking documents that couldn't have possibly been written at the time that they were coming out. And then the things are getting validated a couple of days later. And it's like, wait a second, like this is very nefarious. And now the prosecutor is trying to get his court date set for the day before like one of the bigger elections in like our next cycle. And, you know, I look at this and I use this situation to look at like kind of the trajectory of my life, because back in the day, you know, growing up, I was brought up very conservative, you know, red Republican through and through. And then, you know, when I went to college, I kind of shifted a little bit, kind of went to conspiracies, kind of like, I don't know what's for me. And where I'm finding myself now is like looking at this, and I had an anger phase where it was like, you know, all these people are doing illegal shit. How are they not in jail? How is this stuff not, you know, how are they not being prosecuted? But it's at a point now where, and I think this is what you're saying, to tie this back to like 3D, 4D, 5D, you know, the 3D is being ingrained and having that side, like I'm a Republican, like that's me through and through. 4D is kind of seeing like, oh my gosh, they're going to do this, then this, then this. Now 5D might be kind of where I'm shifting into now in regards to politics, in regards to like, oh my gosh, like this is so cool. Like I'm seeing energy of excitement when I'm seeing them trying to prosecute the day before, because it's like, this is just going to wake more people up. I kind of just see it as like all of these things like woken up. And I think statistically speaking, at least the stats that I've seen, is the more times that he gets indicted, the more that people want to vote for him, which I think is a terrible thing, generally speaking, is a terrible thing for our political establishment for so many reasons. That's terrible. But I think the highlight in it is that it's waking people up to at least the BS that we're getting fed through media or through, you know, these large corporations. And so I don't know. I felt called to share that in regards to this conundrum that we're talking about with like, okay, what can I actually do about it? Well, you can fully divorce yourself from it and then look at it from this higher perspective of seeing how this movie is going to play out.
Yeah, totally. And totally. And like, I think that's a perfect example of what I was trying to relay about that message I got, that we're on the ships and we're in this. So we are dreaming. We are dreaming right now. This is our dream. And the beings that are tending to us are adjusting the variables of the story and basically cranking the dial up so it gets more and more insane, because the objective is to wake us up so that we are no longer identified with the weird things that we have identified ourselves with, so that we can break free of that and we can start to look at it from that more objective perspective and wake up to the truth that at a certain level we're not actually threatened by it. Which I know is a really big thing to say, because at a certain level we are. Like in our human incarnations, we experience suffering, and that's real and it counts. But if you can tap into, for example, like your Akashic records and tap into your past lives, you realize like, oh, even the worst things I've suffered through have not, it doesn't end me. And there's only ever more of me. And so actually it's all okay. Yeah. I always like, these things are so integrated for me, but then when I share them out loud and they're coming out in words, I'm like, I might sound like such a nut bar right now. I'm like just an extremist of like spiritual bypassing. But to me, it doesn't feel like spiritual bypassing. The way that I really came to understand a lot of this was when my second born son died when he was 20 days old. And that was literally my worst fear in this life. Like I remember having it even as a teenager. Like I was either afraid I would never be able to have children or that I would lose a child. And I lived through it. And it was one of the greatest gifts that I could have been given, because I saw that I'm still here. It's okay. It's like I've been through some of the deepest grief this summer around it. It's the 7-year anniversary this year, and it completely sideswiped me. I had no idea that the depth of grief that awaited me was coming at 7 years. So I'm not trying to suggest that there's no pain involved, but it showed me like life continues. There's so much joy in my life. There's so much beauty. My relationship with him is beauty. Like I would do it over and over again just to be his mom. It, you know, like the thing that we think is going to destroy us actually only destroys us if we believe we are destroyed. It only diminishes us if we believe we are diminished. But actually it cracked me open to understand a whole other layer of depth to myself. So I know that I'm not really afraid of being alive anymore, because I know that other things like that are going to happen. That's the way life goes. And I know that I'll be able to handle the next one that does. And it will also like bring me to my knees and break me open. But the only thing I'll find is more of myself.
I appreciate you sharing that. I'm sure that was a wild journey in itself. And something you kind of brought up in there is the idea of spiritual bypassing, which I'm familiar with as in regards to taking on this perspective of, oh, well, I'm a spiritual being, so I don't need to do anything. So, you know, and in your words, I'm not saying that you're doing that, but like, if someone's just to take on that ideology, right, of like, oh, okay, well, you know, my son died, it's all right because we're spiritual beings, I'll see him in another life. How do you make that pivot from it being an integrated, I know that this is okay, versus it being a energy of spiritual bypassing?
Yeah, I think that when we're spiritually bypassing, we can kind of feel that there's a more like human or like a deeper emotional experience that we are trying to detach ourselves from prematurely. So it's kind of like saying, you know, like people sometimes say affirmations and they repeat them robotically. And it's almost like if you look in yourself in the mirror every day and you can say the nicest things to yourself, but if there's a trauma that is keeping a belief that is counter to that affirmation like alive, then you can kind of feel it. You feel the dissonance and you get to a point where you're like, this isn't working, and you have a breakdown, and then the emotions can come up. Like, I also don't worry about people spiritual bypassing too much, because I'm like, everybody's going to get there anyway. Like, we don't get to avoid those emotions forever. We get there when our time comes, you know. And I just, for whatever reason, well, I know why. It's because I wanted to spiritually bypass. It was so confusing for my body. He was born prematurely as well. It was so confusing for my body. And I just wanted to get pregnant again right away. Like, I did not want to feel what I had to feel. And my husband, on the other hand, was like, I can't even think about that. I can't even fathom the possibility of that ever happening to me ever again. So he didn't want to, and I couldn't override his decision. And so I really had no choice but to go through that process of being really present with it. But I can think of a lot of instances in my life where I like tried to kick the can down the road and spiritually bypass and cover it up with a bunch of, you know, platitudes. But eventually it all came for me. So, you know, it's a human thing, I think, that we do, and it's not a big deal in the end.
Yeah. Is that, I guess it feels to me as though you're taking a step back from, I'm trying to think of how to articulate this, because something, I guess that's coming to me, and I don't know how this relates, but I'm going to just go with it and see where it takes us. In the last podcast that I did with Asha Nayaswamy, she was talking about, I brought up to her this Buddhist philosophy, which is that there's relative truth and there's absolute truth. And something about it didn't really feel right to me. And I brought it up to her and she was like, well, you know, there's some truth to it, pun intended, I guess. And she kind of described it as it more being directional, as truth being this directional thing that, you know, you progress deeper to it. It's something that, you can progress deeper to it. You can also move away from it if you so choose, and how it's more of like a linear conundrum of getting closer to absolute truth or getting further away from it. And now I'm not sure why I brought that up, because I thought it was going to come to me as I was explaining that.
Well, I mean, I see the relevance.
Fill me in. Maybe I was supposed to throw it back to you.
Yeah. So when you were saying that, I see it and I agree. Like, bringing it back to spiritual bypassing, it's like, if you are covering it up with unintegrated spiritual platitudes, there's something painful inside of you that you don't want to look at. You can be saying the platitudes and saying the words, but you feel yourself moving farther away from absolute truth. And you can then redirect yourself when you're ready to move towards absolute truth. And that often means moving through extremely painful states of being, but they're all temporary. And every time we actually do have the courage to move through them, we it's almost like a high on the other side, because you've shed so much illusion and you are now resonating closer to that absolute truth. And I think that there is an absolute truth, and I think that absolute truth is love. And I think that that is, like, it can sound so ridiculous and kumbaya, but at the moment of our death, like the majority of us, when we're on our deathbed at the end of our incarnation, like, we already know that none of us are thinking about our bank accounts, and none of us are even thinking about, like, our sort of egoic achievements and accomplishments. We're thinking about those moments, like either the regret of wishing we had said the important thing to the important person, or the time lost that we wish we had spent with those we love, or doing something we love, or on a place, like something that connects us with love, or the appreciation for those moments that connect us with love. It's just the only thing that actually matters, because I think it's an absolute truth, because I think it is, like, the actual truth of everything.
Yeah, this is reminding me. I remember reading an article that I'm trying to pull up right now, which talked about, like, what people say whenever they're in hospice care, of, like, what are the most important things in life? Because that was, that's huge, especially for me. I've had this kind of block around money that has almost vanished at this point, which I'm so happy about. But I can't find the article. 10 things people about. See, this is why I need, is anyone a producer that lives in Pittsburgh? You guys want to come help me pull up stuff?
Like, you totally do need a production.
Yeah. most people say, go ahead if you have it.
No, I just wanted to ask, like, what, if you mind sharing, like, what is that money block as you look for the article?
Oh, the money block.
Or what was it?
Not trusting. Well, I mean, mine was big around trust, not trusting that it was going to come in, not making decisions, based in heart centered and, like, helping people. Like, the more that I did things out of purely not doing it to get money, but doing it because I believe in the vision of something or someone, it just came in. Like, what was the big one? So one example would be, like, with jujitsu. I've recently started teaching and helping the youth program there, which has been super rewarding on so many levels and has taught me a lot about myself and just kids. And, like, I genuinely enjoy it. And, you know, it doesn't pay a lot of money at all. I think it's probably about $15 to $20 per hour, but, you know, I'm doing something I love and I am giving back. You know, I'm giving back to a community that has helped me so much. And what has been happening is, like, the more that I've just approached it with, like, I'm just doing this because I love it. Like, money is just a little add on the top. The people in charge just tend to keep giving me more money. They're like, hey, like, we know you're doing 4 classes a week and it comes out to, like, this much per month, but we're going to just going to bump it up, like, another, like, $50. Oh, hey, we noticed you worked that extra event. Like, we've only been giving $50 to it, but we'll give you, like, another $50. And so that stuff has just been happening. There's another situation that I don't think I can talk about publicly, but I've just noticed that theme has kind of been occurring, where it's like, just kind of keep pursuing the things that you want to do, and, you know, it'll kind of just unlock. And then there's another level to it of, you know, making these, you know, big things, like these big stretches of having, you know, X, like, let's say, like, right now, as I'm recording this, I'm in my parents' basement, but I've been really getting called lately that I need to move out. And, you know, that comes in with all this money things. It's like, well, I'm not seeing the money come in. I'm not seeing this. I'm not seeing that. And, you know, it's been this ping of, do you really need to see the money in order to know that you're going to be supported? Like, how do you know that this isn't the actions you need to take in order to unlock that next level? It's like, oh shit, like, that's a good point. And so I've kind of been making those moves in order, like, I haven't officially signed a lease, but September 1st, I'll be, like, moving into a new place. And I've been seeing, like, things with my coaching program, like learning new things in regard to coaching in order to get more clients in the door I've been implementing, and I can already see, you know, I can kind of see that story we're talking about. I can see like down the road of how this is going to play out. And, you know, it's very, it's beautiful, and it's, and it feels resonant. And I can see how it is. I'm trying to bring this back to a way that would help people who are listening to this story. I can see how it's supportive, and I can see how, you know, it comes back to relativity. Oh, $10,000 is a lot of money. You're making $10,000 a month. That's a lot. And even someone came up to me, I was like, oh yeah, I'm moving into like the Strip District on September 1st. And they're like, oh, you must make a lot of money. And given my current financial situation, I'm just like, it kind of like made me laugh, because, you know, there's so much wrapped up in that of like a relativity. It's like, I didn't say I was moving into the Hamptons. I didn't say I was buying a $1 million mansion. Like, that's a lot of money to me. And so, you know, relativity is mixed into there. A, B, it's not even present realized earnings. And yet there's this outward perception that I'm making a lot of money. And so it's, it really has shown a lot to me in regards to like our perception around things and the way that it influences our decisions. Because like what I was getting called to do was to make a ridiculous, you know, ask in terms of like the housing situation I was going to move into, which was a lot of money, you know, relatively speaking. And so by doing that, it has, in the last month, has shifted me into attracting and doing and acting in ways that would support that lifestyle. And I think this is a big part, is that had it not been unfolding the way that it would have been too much stress for my nervous system to handle. And I think that's where this can come down kind of into the 3D, if you will, is that there have been so many events that have occurred since me starting to search for this place, since saying yes, since the person saying yes, you know, this comes into the whole patience thing, where had my nervous system not been ready for this, I could have shot myself in the foot 10 times already in regards to getting to signing this lease. And I mean, honestly, I can already still see there's a possible tripwire that's laying in front of me in regards to patients, that if I walk across this tripwire, that maybe it'll set off this chain reaction where all this will fall apart. And then adding another layer on top of this, it's being completely okay with that all falling apart. And a lot of this comes back to vulnerability, because I have been telling people like, I'm moving into the Strip District September 1st. But there's still a piece of me that's like, but you haven't officially signed the lease yet. And so, you know, there's this people pleasing, and how are people going to view me if it all falls apart? And so there's just this level of like, there's just so many lessons bound up into this one thing that it's, you know, it's bringing a smile on my face, and I'm getting a little teary eyed just thinking about it. So it's been super cool in all those regards.
Yeah. That's such an amazing breakdown of all of the layers and the nuances, right? That like, you could have just explained it as like, you know, a story of the fear, like, is the money going to be there? Especially if I follow my heart and my soul calling, is it actually going to be there? Can I do it? Which is all true. But then you went into all these other layers underneath it. And that's kind of the complexity that we're all dealing with, which makes the fourth dimension super hard, because there's so many, it's all intertangled and entwined. But it's like when you were talking about this tripwire, and what if I walk into it and then it all falls apart. And I was thinking like, it's only because it's your dream. And, you know, so there's like the tripwire just represents something that you haven't fully smoothed out in your energy. And so then it acts as a tripwire, and then your dream goes and it manifests like, you know, an outcome of it falling apart. And then you said, and then being okay with it just falling apart. And I was like, that's exactly it. That's the thing that smooths out the energy around the tripwire.
And this is the end of part one. In part two, we're going to hear a lot more from Amy talking about tripwires. We are going to talk about a couple other things too, not just tripwires, although they are fun to discuss. We talk about the power of manifesting your dreams, exploring redemption and salvation to find inner peace, and we get into some mother and baby talk. because whether or not you know it, because quite frankly, I forget if we discussed it in the first part, but she was a, I'm blanking. What was she? A midwife. Ah, yeah, that's it. It was a midwife. And so I know we get to, into talking about that more in part two. So guys, sit tight and get ready for part two, manifesting your dreams with the complexities of life.